Hello and welcome to our UKCP podcast. We're recording during the COVID-19 restrictions. Restricted measures mean that both psychotherapists and clients are adapting to new online circumstances. In this episode, our CEO, Sarah Niblock, is talking to UKCP psychotherapist Nicholas Rose to uncover how the pandemic has impacted his practice. Nicholas also shares his top tips for promoting yourself professionally.
Nicholas, thank you for agreeing to take part in our Psychotherapy During COVID-19 podcast series. You and I are speaking in the week that the UK government has slightly eased lockdown rules, but we're still working under the instruction that if you can work remotely, please stay at home. Now, I want to talk with you a little bit later about that word remote. But first of all, I'd like you to just introduce yourself. Tell us a little bit about yourself, please.
Okay, yes, thank you, Sarah. So the name's Nicholas Rose. I'm a UKCP registered psychotherapist. I have a practice in West London. The way that's come about is that I came to a stage where I was I was full. And because I was using rooms, which I paid for, and I really didn't like turning patients away because it takes a long time to get a practice going, I came across some other people that wanted to find some private practice work. And so over the years, a number of people have come to work with me as associates. So there's 10 of us, we base our practices together. When I started, it was a second practice for me. So I started off with a website using my name. Over the years, regretted that a little bit because it means it always puts me at the head of the practice, if you like, even though the idea is that we're peers working together. But marketing people have told me that the website is now so well established that if we were to change the name, we would probably lose a lot in terms of people finding us on Google. So yeah, the practice is called Nicholas Rose and Associates. But we're basically a group of peers that work together. Part of that is that we are also interested in being able to do other kinds of work. So we can work with organisations. We've had a number of projects where there's been a bereavement or complicated loss within an organisation, and they've asked us to provide consultancy or in-house support. Yes, it's great to have that sort of breadth of work. And also, I really love the fact that I get to work with child therapists, family therapists, people that are from different areas, so psychology, different areas of psychology. It's been really supportive during this time, I think, for all of us to have that group that we've been able to meet and talk through Zoom, of course, about how things are for us.
First of all, how has your psychotherapy practice been affected by COVID-19? And if so, in what ways?
So one of the things which is particular to us as a practice is that we use rooms on a license. And so unfortunately, from a business perspective, there hasn't as yet been any government grants available to us to help us with our costs. So we've had rooms that we've paid for, which have been empty, and we've had to keep paying the costs of those. That's been the most difficult thing initially, because it's a huge fixed cost that we have to carry. After that, all of the work obviously has moved online. And we found that whilst a good number of people wanted to continue, there have been people that haven't wanted to. So probably about 30% of people have paused or finished. So definitely a drop in the amount of work that we've been doing, and for the time being also a drop in the number of inquiries. It's interesting that there is so much interest in mental health and psychological well-being. The media is full of articles about stress and anxiety, but as we've discussed in the practice together, we think it's going to be a few months before people turn to counselling and therapy. In the short term, what we've noticed is that the inquiries that we are getting are ones we're not used to getting. So people that may be very suicidal, for example. And so we've had to ensure that we're able to refer people. Well, we know what to do with people that are at immediate risk. It's been notable for us that we're getting those kinds of inquiries. So that's the major impacts on us at the moment. So working online as a practice, we in our peer meetings have talked quite a lot about how it's been to move all of our practices online. Everyone was working online to a degree before, because of course we have patients that, like everyone else, I guess, travels quite often. And so working online has in the past been a helpful alternative as opposed to the main way of working. Having said that, of course, the people that have worked for a long time have long-term patients. Then, of course, if someone has moved away, it's quite likely that you have patients that you've been seeing online for a long time, which a number of us have. But it is interesting that it's a sort of a mind shift in a way to working completely online.
You are an active media commentator for Sky and other brands, and you run a, if I may say so, a very dynamic website.
Thank you. You
have regular blog posts, there are videos on there. It would seem to be important in your work to try to demystify psychotherapy for the public. Is that a challenge that you face, the need to explain what psychotherapy is right now?
This is a big question for me. I came from a corporate career in strategy and marketing, and training to be a therapist, I had the fantasy that once I was qualified, that I would put up a little brass plaque somewhere and people would just flock to me, that I wouldn't need to do anything because now I was going to be a professional therapist, and maybe I had an illusion of what it might be like for lawyers, that they qualify and move into a practice and the work just comes. So it was quite a shock to me when I qualified and realised that I would need to market my practice. And I felt quite ambivalent about it initially. But what I realised was that I don't want to say it's a necessary evil, because I actually enjoy it.
Yeah, and it's so interesting what you say, because many of the members who responded to our recent COVID-19 survey said they know that, particularly now in the age of lockdown and online, it is a very busy marketplace, and they know that they may need to self-market in a more vigorous way, but question whether self-promotion conflicts with psychotherapy ethics. You mentioned that you were a bit ambivalent to start with, and I wondered what your thoughts are about the ethics of marketing.
Well, I guess the first thing I think is that if we don't put ourselves out there clearly, then we're not going to be able to use our skills and our experience for the good. So how can that be ethical? For me, at least, to know that I've got something that I can offer that is helpful, and to know what I offer and to be able to put that across to people is, I think, what's ethical. Knowing that we can put it across to people in a way which is clear and honest, I suppose, with integrity. The language that we tend to use probably comes often more from us as opposed to us starting where people are. You know, people are sad, so they want somebody to help them with their sadness or their loneliness. But quite often, the wording we use is depression or anxiety or existential therapy or cognitive behavioural therapy, that we really need to meet people where they are, not where we are. And I think that's the important thing to promoting ourselves, is that we put ourselves in the shoes of our patients and we communicate with them in such a way as that they can recognise that we've got something to offer. So, yeah, going back to the word sad, for example, people looking around for help see that, Yeah, okay. It's okay to come to therapy to talk about sadness. I've noticed over the years that there's been often times, and I'm sure many therapists have experienced this, where your patients will be almost thinking that they're not ill enough to be there, that there's a sort of self-indulgence. And I think that our language is often unhelpful from that point of view.
I think you're so right. It's so interesting hearing you talk about this, because when you said that some people feel they're not ill enough to be working with a psychotherapist, I hear that so often. And I hear so much that you have to be really needy to need to go to a psychotherapist as opposed to a counsellor. There is so much confusion amongst the public as to what psychotherapy is for and at what stage in your life or at stage in your distress. And I think it would be so good if the general public could be helped to understand that this is something that you can do to help you get as much as possible out of your life, rather than waiting until trauma or depression or sadness sets in. And I think the media doesn't help with that either in many ways. Where do you even start when thinking about publicising your practice?
Look around initially at what everyone else is doing. Maybe draw up a list of 10 of your favourite websites, favourite leaflets, whichever ways in which you can see therapists being found and promoted, to draw up a list of the ones that you like most, and then to see what it is that they're doing which you think is a hook for you and for your interest. And then think about the people that you want to work with. By the time we move into private practice, we of course know so much about what goes on for people in their lives, and so what's important to them. In a way, we have a huge base of market research available to us, and what you think will be the messages that people will pick up on. The other thing I would say is that there is, for me, never a golden seam. That it's not that you can ever expect to do one thing that's going to bring in loads and loads of work and completely fill your practice, that it's always going to be a load of different things you have to do. Personally, I have always wanted the freedom that can come with private practice, in as much as you work with your patient to know how much time they need with you. Whereas, of course, if you're going for EAPs, you might have restrictions on only being able to offer 5 or 6 or 3 or 10 sessions. So that's something that you need to think about, is what kind of work you want to get. But after that, it always involves an awful lot of work. In our practice, we have people coming from GPs. We have people coming from Google, from leaflets, from articles in the newspaper. There's referrals from old patients. For us, we get a few clients, a few patients from lots of different activities. Try not to be disappointed. Try not to have too greater expectations. You just have to keep plugging away, trying new things.
Now, language is something that's important to you. You talked about meeting the client or the service user or the patient with where they are. And we've been having a conversation about language offline. I shared in a recent bulletin to members that we were going to use the term remote to describe providing therapy via phone or video call, because quite a few members have pointed out that delivering therapy via video is still face-to-face, even if it's not in person.
So, as I was saying earlier, I think we need to start where people are. And so people are looking for help with certain things. And so our websites need to be based on that, because when people Google, they're going to be Googling for help and not necessarily words like remote therapy.
I agree. It does sound such a distance between you and the client and the therapist, as you say. And I suppose we were trying to find a term that embraced both, you know, calls and telephone therapy. Quite a number of our therapists are working on telephone, either as well as or just as telephone therapists. It's such a very difficult one, and remote seems to be a term that's now used. It speaks to the kind of digital exponential development in digital, because that has its own language, and that language of technology is then infiltrating professions like psychotherapy in a way that we are being pulled along, as opposed to us controlling that language and that direction of travel and the pace of that. And I think that is a real challenge to the profession right now, that we have that space to actually say, no, this is how we would like to control that journey. And COVID just seems to have taken that off our hands a little bit.
Well, what I was thinking about is maybe for us, because we have had to change in a very profound way. Yes, all of us will have worked online, but the need to have to move everything online, I think, has probably done something to us more than to people that are looking for counselling. What I mean by that is that suddenly we have become very aware that there's in person and there's online, or there's the kind of being with, or the kind of having to use technology. I think that people will be looking for counselling and therapy and psychotherapy, and that maybe it's us that have gotten hooked on needing to differentiate. It would be really good to have some research to see what our patients and what people actually think. What is it that they're going to look for? What words will they search for? What is important to them? And then we're able to make sure that our messaging, our websites, our language is able to connect with them in that.
Nicholas, I want to say thank you very much for your insights. I think they will prove very useful and trigger lots of thoughts and ideas on the part of our members.
You've been listening to UKCP psychotherapist Nicholas Rose speaking to Sarah Niblock, our CEO. If you're interested in finding out more about the role of psychotherapy during the COVID-19 crisis, then why not check out one of our previous episodes? We are regularly updating our website with helpful guidance and resources, which you can find by visiting psychotherapy.org.uk. Till next time.